Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM Sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello everyone and welcome to What A Night, part of the 90 Min Podcast Network. Really sorry we haven't actually sat down to record anything in recent weeks. Just been busy here at 90 Min Towers. Joining me today, Sean Walsh, is just one person, just you, Jude Summerfield, here at 90 Min Towers.
Yeah, and it's a flesh meeting as well. It's an in-the-flesh meeting.
I haven't had one of those in a while.
Which is, not since...
Not with you, since before the pandemic.
Not with you, mate. Not with you. Not since pre-pandemic, yeah. So... lovely to chat coys in real life, IRL.
Yeah, quite a bit has happened since we last even talked about it, really.
Yeah, quite a lot. I feel like the last time we recorded, we would have been quite upbeat and happy and feeling like everything was in our hands, so to speak. It's sort of wobbled off a little bit.
Just a little
but
bit.
But we're starting to get there again now.
Yeah, I think I was saying to you earlier that it felt like after the Aston Villa win, I was pretty confident that we were at top four, that was ours to really lose, because I just thought Arsenal's games in hand were really tough. I thought I backed us to get maximum points at least until the Liverpool game this weekend, and that's really not what happened. You know, we dropped points to, ironically, the other teams that you and I cover, starting with your beloved, Brighton and Hove Albion Football Club.
Yeah, there was some interesting custody of Sean and Jude matches in those weeks.
Yeah, well, you lost yours.
I mean, neither of us came out very well from it, to be honest. No goals, no shots on target, but yeah, the Brighton one was very, very odd. I've chatted to a few mates from Brighton about the game just in the aftermath. And we were all in agreement that Bissouma basically did a job on Kane.
Yeah.
I think Mwepu was playing in that game as well, and he played really well.
Mwepu did well until about the 40th minute when he probably could have got sent off.
Yes, that was the thing. Yeah,
and he got hooked and it kind of reset what Brighton needed.
Yeah, so he was really good in there. And then we fell victim to the Trossard left wing back curse, which got Arsenal as well, I think. That was a really disappointing one. That was a no shots on target game, wasn't it? Where nothing was going right. There was no creative spark there. Nothing from wide areas, really.
It was just really flat. I couldn't really.
It was a really flat game.
Do you know what? I think it was one of those where you could tell it was going to come because everyone in the day leading up to it, because it was a really hot day, I remember, really sunny. It was like the first like kind of, you know, you get like games either in August or in May where everyone wears like the actual club shirt to the game rather than like legs or whatever. And so in this case, Tottenham Hotspur Stadium was just a sea of white Spurs shirts. And you're like, it's great. We'll go have beers on the concourse before the match. We'll go beers after. You know, it's gonna be great. Spurs lost. Okay, cool. So it wasn't so great there. But was it? I don't know. Did it feel like the same way that Brighton did Arsenal the week before? Because that seems like a long time ago as well. But I do remember, you know, towards the end of the game, Brighton fans were singing North London.
Yeah, I think their game against Arsenal, they were generally a lot more progressive with the ball and they created more chances. because that goal that Brighton scored at the end of the Spurs game, that I think that was one of the few they had. And in that Arsenal game, they were just, not to needlessly slag off Arsenal, but they were just they were cutting them open pretty regularly from what I remember and what I saw. So they were different games. Obviously Arsenal are probably a bit more expansive in their playing style than Spurs are. Spurs just try and go wide and get the ball in and get the ball to the main players and all that jazz. But yeah, Brighton have just they put that 6-game losing streak behind them and started to play quite well, which was frustrating for us because obviously at that time Spurs were smashing teams all over the shop. Arsenal were losing games. It looked like top four was going in one way. And then we got the Brentford game, which was you were at that one, weren't you?
I was. Yeah, not a classic.
Not a classic, but there were some nice little subplots in there as well, weren't there?
I like that they mainly revolved around me, but you know, there was a football match going on as well. So I guess we'll talk about that instead.
Yes, we will. I mean, like, from being at the game, were there any Spurs players who stood out in particular? Or
I thought Romero was good at having to clean up a lot of the nonsense that we were creating for ourselves. I think that on set pieces, he was a bit, not necessarily like a liability, but you could tell that he's not a tall, aerial commander.
Yeah,
defender.
He's not that kind of defender, is he?
And then Tony was being left unmarked on every single corner and free kick. It was just like, why? This guy is obviously the biggest threat.
Yeah.
Why is he the one being left alone? He hit the bar twice. And probably in another world, Mbeumo probably scores the rebound with the 90th minute chance as well. And I thought apart from that, it's kind of what I expected from that game because Brentford, one of their, it's like Brighton, their strengths are they stay competitive a lot. I think the Brentford game with Man United was probably an anomaly in their season, but every other game of the season they've always kind of hung around, stuck around and just kind of wait for the right time to make their to hit their blows really. And I thought they did a really good job of nullifying Spurs. I think the best spell Spurs had was about 15 minutes at the start of the first half, and it was like even then it didn't yield any shots on target. It was Brentford got bodies behind the ball. There was a lot of block shots. It was a lot of stifling Spurs when they needed to. And then, I guess apart from that, Christian Eriksen had a really good game.
Yeah.
But I think we've come to expect that from him already this season because he's the best player in that team.
Yeah, he's been brilliant. Yeah. I guess the concerning thing about those two games is that there is now quite an obvious blueprint into how to stop this Conte Spurs team. If you just keep things really, really compact, you don't let Kane see as much of the ball as possible, and you stay nice and resistant to any counter attacks. Thankfully, I think the games that we've got to play aren't really going to follow that mould anymore. I can see Arsenal coming to Spurs and sitting quite low, and maybe trying to hit on the break, but like Liverpool won't do that. I suppose Burnley will. Burnley absolutely will.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, and then Norwich last game of the season. Like if they, regardless of what position they're in, if they don't go there, it'd be an absolute disgrace.
Don't need any real insightful takes on that Norwich game. Yes. Yeah, whatever. Okay, so I think we've delved a bit enough into.
Yeah, our timeline's all over the shop. Where are we going?
Yeah, what are we doing? Anyway, we actually did win the game this weekend, so let's maybe talk about that.
Yes.
Didn't actually start that well, did it? I mean, because I was there covering it, and it did feel in the first 20 minutes that there was a lot of pent-up frustration that Spurs were making a lot of silly errors, largely what Ben Davis is doing, but, you know, didn't actually do tangible harm in the end, so I guess that's fine in the end.
It contributed to quite a bad atmosphere in the first game.
But I do think the ironic thing is it's fine because we didn't concede. If we did concede, I think that could have gone really, really sour. I think we could have lost by 2 or 3. But what it did was it lifted, because I was sitting next to someone in the press box and he was saying to me, the crowd, it feels like the crowd needs something to lift them. And it usually, that's a goal. In this case, it was everyone deciding to abuse John Moss, the referee. I think I kind of like,
spark something in Spurs to really.
It took us a while to get a foul in that game.
I think Moss probably realised that, like, Leicester getting every single 50-50.
Yeah, it was
the fouls or the tackles, like, it doesn't really matter. They're still getting everything, and so you could feel the frustration. But you've got the stats up
from here. What time is this? This is like, when's that? That's the 20th minute, 18th minute.
So before the goal.
Yeah, before the goal, 6 fouls committed by Spurs and none by Leicester, which is quite. This is quite odd, isn't it?
Yeah, it doesn't really feel like that's an exact science, really.
Yeah, not really. But that was a sort of game which really could have been annoying and a bit nuggety.
Yeah,
until we got the most basic goal. Like we talk about Son and Kane link up, like, and all the immense assists that they provide for each other. This one was just a knock into the box, and just an easy header from
I don't know what the exact stat is, but I'm sure Leicester are like the worst team defending set pieces this year. Like every time I watch anyone on Sky or BT and then defending a corner, it comes up with a stat. It's like the worst team's defending set pieces, and Leicester out in front by like 5 or 6 goals. It's like ridiculous. So I think for us, like, we're not. I don't think we've ever been amazing at set pieces. So,
Not for a while, no.
We've been okay. I think we scored against Newcastle recently. Davis scored a header, didn't he?
Yeah.
That was like second ball from a corner. So I guess that helps, I guess. But we're not overly amazing.
I suppose they're quite a big team, but they don't have any major aerial threats, do they? They're all sort of like 6 foot and unlike a Virgil van Dijk towering sort of presence.
And as someone who, like we said earlier, intensity has been covering Brentford this season, who do rely on set pieces, who look to get every margin set piece and troubled us with set pieces.
Yeah.
You do wonder if we're missing something there. So, no, nice score from a set piece. You know.
Very, very nice. Very, very nice. And then, it took a little while to get the second one, didn't it? I mean, I suppose we can touch on Lucas Moura being given a start for that first hour.
I don't think we should. I think I wasn't incensed by the call to drop Kulusevski, because I did think he wasn't. I don't think anyone's really impressive in those two games. Mm. No. If you're going to make a change, I guess Kulusevski is probably the one to come out if you're going to stick with the 3-4-3, sorry.
Yeah, he'd be the more obvious switch.
It's not Son and it's not Kane. So yeah. Kulusevski has to come out. Put Lucas in. Lucas has a lot of backers. I know my dad in particular is like the chairman of the Lucas fan club. I asked Thomas Frank before the Brentford game, actually, and I asked him about Kulusevski, and he went and said, "Oh, big fan of Lucas Moura." And I was like, so I don't know, maybe it's for people over the age of 40 or something. Maybe they really like Lucas more than the young ones, but whatever. Did not look like his normal self, and I don't mean that in the sense of, because, you know, he's always a bit wasteful, he's always a bit like, you know, he's a flair player, he's going to give the ball away. He just looked like he lacked a lot of confidence, though, and that's not usually like him. He is the irrational confidence guy who thinks he's the best player in the world, and he did not look like he thought he was the best player in the world in this game.
Yeah, he just didn't look sure of himself at any point, did he, really? And there were a few occasions when he was sort of unaware of what was around him and the ball got nicked off his toes. And then in that first hour, when you had like Kane, who was being a bit sloppy with the ball as well, suddenly a lot of sort of our avenues to goal weren't really providing us with anything going forward. So Lucas was a bit disappointing, and I don't think he'll be getting a start anytime soon now.
Because we had the perfect replacement for him, and the man who's going to take his starting spot back came on and made an immediate impact. Dejan Kulusevski.
That guy is just—he's an absolute nonsense of a footballer. It's ridiculous.
I've got
the stats up here now.
Yeah, read out the statute.
Yeah, so 14 Premier League appearances, 3 goals. I guess it's probably been a while since he scored, hasn't it? So you'd maybe like him to.
It feels like he scored more.
It does.
I guess it's because he's contributing so much that we've just been so impressed by his performances that.
And he's into that front three. Yeah. So sort of thing.
I think we'll get to this later, but it does feel like the same with Luis Diaz at Liverpool. Like, he's not contributing loads of goals, but it feels like he is because he's playing so well.
Yeah, and he's just gelled into the system so quickly.
Yeah.
So 3 goals, 14 Premier League appearances, and 8 assists, 2 of which came on Sunday against Leicester. And that first one, very, very nice. It was just, it was more sort of about composure and sort of, he seemed to sort of wait for Leicester's defence to sort of move itself around a little bit, really. And Son displayed some really nice movement as well. But Kulusevski just managed to hold on to the ball for a little bit and found Son for a really, really nice finish. Lovely turn as well.
I think it's one of those ones where if that happens in the first 10 minutes of the game, it feels like he scuffs it because he's not quite got it. He's not got a feel of the game yet. Like, I think that's the thing with Son aging. Like I said it before, he's not physically as quick or as imposing anymore. It does feel like that's one of the part. Like his first touch is a little bit off. Little.
He's just a forward now. He's a central forward.
Yeah,
he's
we'll
not going
to
be out.
Yeah,
and
we'll get to him. But yeah, I tweeted the other day. I didn't even think that when we signed Kulusevski in January, that this is even what the best case scenario of him would have looked like. That I just like the video's been doing the rounds of him just toying with Luke Thomas on the right hand side and playing a great ball to Højbjerg as Luke Thomas commits the most cynical foul ever.
That was pretty poor, wasn't it?
I thought
I wasn't happy with that show.
Yeah, I think if that's a player with a reputation, then you may be looking at something harsher.
Yeah,
but
I saw someone say Højbjerg was wearing Dr. Martens and he tried to control that.
It wasn't annoying because I felt for him because I thought he actually had a really good game, and then he goes and does something like that, and that's the thing that people remember.
Yeah, I suppose it's not really. If he's going to score, he'll be like arriving on the end of something rather than
scored a couple of bangers for us, hasn't he?
Yeah. There was that one against Liverpool.
Wolves, I think, where the ball rebounds to the edge of the area.
He got that one as well. Decent little goal threat, nothing major.
But yeah, but Kulusevski just completely changed the game for me. Like we just look so much more in control and more composed.
Yeah, he's just such a fluid player as well. Just interlinks with Son and Kane much better than Lucas has ever really.
It feels like when Lucas is there, he's like the spare part. He's like
I'm going to do my own thing
kind of player. Like he's never. I'm trying to think. Like apart from Emerson, who's obviously like his fellow Brazilian.
Mm-hmm.
I can't ever remember like Lucas being really kind of pally with someone. The only thing I can think of was when Gareth Bale came and he started doing like the L celebration.
Yeah, there was that.
It was like that was really it. It's like
there was him and Vinicius last year as well, wasn't there?
Yeah,
where they got played up.
Connection again. But you don't ever see Lucas with Son or with Kane or whatever the same way that those two with each other.
Yeah, they're not like cliquey, are they? I don't think.
I know. Yeah, that's not saying that.
Maybe they've cottoned on to some of Lucas' politics, and that's.
I was thinking maybe they clocked on to just the way that he plays, but.
I swear, this guy is playing against us. This guy is playing against us.
I guess we. So.
Should we leave the third goal for now?
Yeah.
And chat about our man Christian Romero.
I think we should.
Because this fella has just been out of this world. I'd say especially the last few months, even in the games that we haven't played particularly well in, he's just been enormous. And just his appetite to go... I'm sure like seeing it in the flesh is something different than watching it on TV, isn't it? Because he does... The challenges he puts in, they're not... Like, I'd say if he gets them like a split second wrong, he's probably in a bit of trouble.
Yeah.
But his timing is just always on point.
With the second goal, I mean, I can't remember what I was looking at it with the other day when they were saying, I think it was my cousin, and he was saying for the goal, oh, you know, Lucas needs to, not Lucas, Romero needs to be really careful because that's a really dangerous chance. I was like, he got the ball.
Yeah.
He got the ball, and it wasn't late, it was nothing like. I don't know what it was like on the TV, but you didn't sense that it was a part of you coming. You could tell it was fine. It was really good, and I thought that was really kind of poetic that it just that goal came from him doing an outrageous bit of defending, and then I was very very close to writing a whole bit on about how he's like he should be like the embodiment of new Spurs, so to say. Like I think I talked a bit before about how we need to like move on from the Poch era, and that involves like, you know, not signing Eriksson, signing these new players, signing these players in the mold of Bentancur, Kulusevski. Romero is definitely like that guy. He's so aggressive in a good way.
Just a classic danger spotter, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's got that license to go out and just crunch.
It's like the little like toe post gets his foot in front of the hook around him.
Yeah.
Won't always come off, but it's in a way that he really kind of intimidates the striker. Like Daka, I think, started. It's a little bit dangerous. Like he was getting in some good positions, but from about the 10th minute onwards, I don't think he had a sniff. And I think that was the same with Antonio when West Ham came.
Yeah,
I think it was the same with Chris Wood when Newcastle came.
He's the guy for the battle, isn't he?
Yes,
he's the guy who goes up against any beefy striker and just says, right, we're having it out.
Yeah, I think he kept Tony under lock from open play, at least in the Brentford game. I think there's a lot of examples where he's doing basically all he can as a mere mortal to keep us in this. I think at the start of the season, I think Jamie Carragher might have said, like, I think he let the Rupert Irene out was for Arsenal specifically, but I think it can translate to us as well, where you can't buy like these kind of project players. You need to buy the players who are good already but have the potential to make a leap, like the way that when Van Dijk and Mane went to Liverpool, they all of a sudden within like a year were like world class.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Romero definitely kind of fits that bracket. Work. I don't think I'm not saying he's going to get like team of the season or anything this season, but next season, if he were to win like Spurs as player of the year, get team of the season, Spurs have a really good defensive record, I would not be shocked by that at all.
Yeah, could see that. I mean, there's always so much competition for those sort of awards, aren't there? Mm-hmm. Like, it's like this season it's sort of de facto City and Liverpool. But I could definitely see something like that happening. And it's great having, I know we talk about his sort of physical prowess and that as well, but he's great on the ball.
Yeah,
like his little turns out of trouble, and he's very confident.
It's quite interesting because he doesn't always look necessarily comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of the comparison where someone like they don't look like they're in total control what they are. I think it's probably when Kane first came into the team. Like, he looked a bit clunky.
Yeah,
but
still does.
Yeah,
I guess.
But I trusted him not to lose the ball. I trusted him that he was going to keep possession. I think the comparison thing about actually Wanyama, where it felt like every kind of ball he had was like bouncing and was bobbling along, and he was just kind of like, but he used his body so well to shield it. He used his feet so well to just keep it within his own like kind of little circle.
Yeah,
and I think that's really, because I think for a long time, well, maybe for like a couple of years, but whatever, like the Mourinho era felt like forever. We did feel like we'd kind of lacked technical midfielders across the pitch.
Yeah, this is true. Well, it was all one game plan, wasn't it, a few years ago? Just get the ball to a couple of players, and then, I mean, who I can't even remember who we would be playing in midfield then. It would be like Højbjerg and Sissoko. Yeah,
Winks.
I mean, that's going to be.
Doble played for a little bit, which was nice back then.
Yeah. Everyone's favourite Gio Lo Celso,
Champions League semi-finalist Gio Lo Celso.
Yeah, didn't make the final though, did he?
Didn't, no.
I like it.
yeah. 1 point from Sergio Aurier, just showing off their silver medal
that was
in the dressing room.
Yeah, that was fun. Sergio Aurier got an appearance last night, didn't he?
I said this on Twitter last night. How chaotic would a Foyth Romero centre back partnership have been?
Would have loved it. Would have loved it.
I mean, we might consider like 60 goals a season, but it would have been so good.
Juan Foyth would be starting at right wing back for us right now.
Dan Kilpatrick of this parish did tweet the other week. I think he hadn't tweeted in about a few days, so it's quite a little shock. It's like, I can't remember what the quote she was. It was like, name something that you miss, and it was like Sergio Aurier. And people were like, whoa! Like, you can't say that.
I can't disagree with him, to be fair.
He's
obviously a massive liability, but I don't know what Emerson Royale is. So
I trust Conte to coach Aurier out of his bad habits, I think.
I think so. It'll be his way or the highway, I'm sure.
But he's at Villarreal, so let's talk about that.
All right, mate.
Do you want to talk about Son now?
Yeah, let's talk about Son.
Do you want to talk about Son?
So he did that first goal.
What a player.
But yeah, what a player. That goal to just wrap up proceedings, 79th minute. Left-footed, which is, I know he's a very two-footed player.
Scored more weak-foot goals than strong-foot goals this season.
Yeah, I've definitely seen him come in off the right and curl one into the left. I think he's done it against Leicester before. Do you remember when we won like 2-0 at the King Power a few seasons ago? It might have been 18-19.
Yes, 18-19.
And he just shimmied inside and just smacked it with his left.
Yeah,
that was a great goal. But yeah, he's the man. He obviously got the assist for the first goal.
Yeah.
Two more goals there. He was an absolute FPL masterstroke for whoever had them.
On 90 Mil, we do FPL tips every week. And it feels like for weeks we've been saying, oh, you got to buy the dip on Kane and Son. They're not going to not score forever.
I actually played my wild card before the Brighton game, and I got Kulu, Son, and Kane in.
So it's your full call.
Yeah. I got two big blanks there, but then they obviously all did the business at the weekend. Anyway, an amazing strike, and I know you are firmly on the drum about this goal.
I am the Son truther and the Nonpeng golden boot.
So how are those illustrious standings at the moment?
So Son has scored the most Nonpeng goals in the league this season. He's two clear of Salah.
Because those are all of his goals, aren't they?
Yes.
So he's got all 19 of them.
Yeah.
It's 19.
Yeah, 19 from overplay. Kane has scored 11 open play goals, I think. I think that's it. I think he's only scored like two pens.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
But I just think that's such a more kind of replicable skill when you've got the open play. Like, I think, you know, you don't know how many goals, how many penalties you're going to score in a season, whatever. But, yeah. But I think, I'm trying to think, like, does anything about his overall game look different to you? Because it does feel, because it felt like last season was really the leap. And
yeah,
then this season is this season just more of a continuation of that because it's a better team than it was last season?
I think that that definitely plays into it. I think he was always due a season where he did explode a bit more because he hadn't hit the, he still hasn't hit the 20 goal mark in the Prem. I'm sure he will do it this season.
Touch wood.
But yeah. In terms of actual differences, I'm not sure really. I mean, it does seem that there's just a more of a focus of him staying infield.
Mm.
Him not being that, because you know, under Poch, if he, you know, when we played at Wembley, he'd just be like hugging the touchline,
yeah,
or like coming infield every
now and
again.
I'm not convinced Poch ever really loved him like that.
No,
I don't think until the end, at least. Like in I think the Champions League run was when Son was winning, getting the win like every game. It was like,
yeah,
okay, now I can actually trust this guy. Before that, you know, he was getting shifted to the left wing back in like the FA Cup semi final. He was the one that if we went for to 3-4-3 like against Real Madrid, he would be the one to get dropped. Like he wasn't ever that guy under Poch. It was really maybe it's like part of the Mourinho plan when he realised Eriksen was going to leave and Dele Alli wasn't what it used to be. That okay, I got to funnel more into this guy who's really quick. He's two-footed. His finishing. I remember a stat actually. I wouldn't tweet this because I couldn't find the actual official one. So
okay.
I'm not a spreader of misinformation, Jude. You know me.
Sounds like fake news to me.
You know me, Jude. I don't deal in if buts and maybes. I deal in absolutes.
Being serious.
I remember. So the app Understat, I think they said that Son is overperforming his XG by 100 million goals. Not the exact thing. Not the exact thing, but thereabouts.
That might be fake news. Yes. You might get some hate mail.
Excuse news.
Excuse me.
But yeah, so basically they were saying was the only person who comes close to that is Messi in like the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
But Messi's total was like half of what Son's was. So Son is like the best finisher in terms of goals that you probably shouldn't score from where he takes shots.
Yeah.
In the last 5 years, and it's like,
I mean, that's been easy to see, hasn't it?
How
cold he is in front of goal now.
Yeah.
Like, I think first few seasons, obviously, you're still discovering a new player. You're wondering how they're going to sell.
When
they go through on goal,
yeah,
you don't really know.
And you know, do you know what the first thing that came to my mind was? Do you remember when we played Monaco away, 16-17?
Mm-hmm.
And there's the image of him running. He's one-on-one.
Mm.
And then, like, 2 seconds later, he's running out of the 18-yard box himself. But the only person who's touched the ball in that time was him. And it's like, it's just completely different now. He's got, like, you're right, the 1v1 situation, he's very Kane-like. He's going to strike the ball so cleanly. It's going to hit the net, and the net's going to make a ping sound because it's been hit so well.
Yeah.
And then when he's away from the box, you can't let him on either foot.
He's got such a wide array of threats, hasn't he? Like, when he does run through, I think he did that against Villa and then West Ham, you're pretty confident he's going to put them away.
Yeah.
If a team is silly enough to give him a little bit of space on the edge of the box, like Leicester were at the weekend, he'll smash him in top corner. He's just like, it's hard to put into words just what a fantastic player he is. It's an odd one, isn't it? Because I think at points we might have been just mislabeling him as a purple patch player, and
you know how much
I think we were all probably in that
at some point
mindset
level. Yeah.
At some point, but like you do have to sort of realise it at some point that this is just a fantastic player, and we're almost lucky to see him play for Spurs, and that he seems to genuinely love the club.
Snuck onto the club's top 10 all time goal scorers list recently.
Yeah,
because I was thinking of this as an angle for an article. Like, he's probably more of a Spurs legend now than Eriksen and Alli were, because he's stuck around, because he's, you know, he's committed to the future, and he's peaked again after they've left in this new era, like with Poch and then after Poch as well. It does feel like he's going to be remembered quite fondly, and I'm really happy about that, because
yeah, absolutely.
You know, I like seeing players get
their flowers when they deserve them.
Yeah, and when those sort of goal records come up, it's probably just because Harry Kane's a little
yeah,
bit ahead of him.
Yeah, it's the thing,
and
yeah.
It's just seen as the main guy that he doesn't get the credit he deserves.
I think he's only 3 goals behind Salah in the race for the Golden Boot. I don't think he gets there because I just imagine Salah's going to bag a few in his last few games, and yeah, it's going to be hard for Son to really kind of leapfrog that, unless he has, like, you know, when Kane ended the 16-17 season, he scored like 7 goals.
What, Hull and Leicester? Yeah. The whole game was hilarious. Was the only subplot in that game. I remember being like, "Oh, Kane might get Golden Boot, but
he might piss off Alexis and Lukaku."
Yeah, and then we were like 4-0 up in 20 minutes.
Yeah. I remember the other subplot of that game was we lost Hugo Lloris the Golden Glove because we conceded a really dumb goal, and he got really fuming. He was like looking around.
Who scored for Hull? I feel like it might have been Robertson or Klukas or someone.
Look it up. You do the important research.
the glory is Tottenham 7, Hull 1. Everyone scored. Like Ben Davis scored. Wanyama, Alderweireld.
Oh, you're right.
Oh, Sam Klukas. Yeah. Do you remember Sam Klukas?
Sam Klukas.
He was the guy who got into trouble for doing some sort of 4chan
signal. Oh, was that him?
Yeah, that was that dude. Yeah, that was weird.
How did we get to talk about this?
I haven't talked about Sam Klukas in years. So strange. Okay, that's probably enough Leicester done, isn't it? I reckon.
I think so. I think we got to come on to the big one. Yeah. I think we can't leave this pod without talking about the Liverpool game.
We can't put it off any longer. What a horrible fixture it is, Sean.
It is. So
good lord.
So I did an article about why this is so important, not just in terms of our season, but in terms of Conte necessarily staying. Because I think if you can't go read it on 90 minutes, please do, because it really, you know, I have a family to feed. Got to get that ad revenue. But it was basically like, if we win here, then it feels like it's in such these circumstances that we haven't won at Anfield and Yonkers, that Liverpool are going for a quadruple, that it does feel like maybe we are ready to make a leap next season. Mm-hmm. I compared it to when, do you remember when Liverpool beat Man City 4-3 in 17-18?
Yeah,
and ended Man City's unbeaten run. Yes. Mm-hmm. I think they were going for the Invincibles and the Centurions at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of like, oh, Liverpool, they might, you know, they've got Van Dijk now, maybe they're going to be more than just disruptors, maybe they're going to be contenders soon.
Mm-hmm.
I think there have been times this season, like, we've been really inconsistent at times, but when we've hit our heights, our peaks have looked probably higher than Chelsea's, I would say. I'm extremely biased. But I think when we've Tottenham at their best, are better than Chelsea at their best.
Style of football wise, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's not what Chelsea are.
Yeah, Chelsea just aren't like that.
They just suck the way out of games.
The way that we can kill teams is insane. The thing that we've seen in the second half of the season, I haven't seen since that 16-17 season, like I said, when we scored 86 goals and conceded 26.
Yeah.
Which is unbelievable when you think about that. But this is a massive mental hurdle to overcome, because 4 seasons in a row, we've gone to Anfield. We could / should have won. I think so. Let's go through.
You want to go? You want to go?
I think we need some therapy. We need to go through.
Well, all right.
We'll start. We'll start with the first one. That's actually the kindest, because actually.
Which one's the first one?
17-18. When we drew 2-2, the Wanyama Thunderbolt equaliser.
Oh, that was brilliant!
Unbelievable.
Yeah, that. I suppose I get the should have won narrative from that one. You know what? Like, that was also just such a sick game as well.
I enjoyed the
fallout was great.
The fallout was so good. And it didn't. I think the thing that I always come back to is that it didn't actually impact our season. Like,
yeah,
if we'd won, we still would have come third. Yeah, and it didn't really matter. Like, as far, if Liverpool came above us, then maybe I would have been a bit annoyed.
Did that start the whole aggro towards Harry Kane, that game?
I think
that game must have come, the Stoke one, relatively soon.
It was about a month after or something. Yeah, yeah,
definitely got
that. He draws contact for the first pen, which he misses. Salah goes down the other end, scores a really great goal, like just weaves his way between Davis and Vertonghen. We go down the other end. Van Dijk boots Lamella in the leg. Liverpool fans can't live with the fact that he did actually boot him in the leg and it wasn't him diving.
This is the one I never understand.
There's one angle where it looks like he doesn't brush him, but it's only because of the perspective of it.
Yeah.
Every single other angle, Van Dijk has booted him. that was the most enjoyable one. Then in 18-19, we had... We actually snuck it to 1-1. I wasn't expecting anything, but we got it to 1-1. I think Lucas scored in like the 70th minute or something to equalise.
Yeah.
And then the famous clip of Sissoko running through on goal. he has a choice. Can he play it to, I think it was Son running with him, but Van Dijk's marked him out of the game really well. Van Dijk knows that if Sissoko takes a shot with his left foot, he's not going to score. Lo and behold, he blasts it over.
Oh,
and then Liverpool go on the other end, it just rolls in off Alderweireld's shin or
whatever. Yeah, it was a dodgy young goal.
I remember like falling to my knees and being like, I can't believe that's happened. I really can't believe that's that, just yeah, happened.
That one was terrible.
1920, Kane scored after about 20 seconds.
Yeah, I actually wasn't. I didn't watch this game. I didn't watch it. I was in Rome watching Roma AC Milan.
And I was at Arsenal versus Palace when Xhaka blew up.
Oh yeah, the whole
I remember going to that game just not. I thought it was the end of the Poch era, and I wasn't that asked about it. So, but I remember like when they went 1-0 up, I was like, "You can't give me hope. You can't do that. You can't just do that."
That was an odd sort of goal as well, wasn't it?
It was.
It was just a header or a tap in.
And then we had a couple of really good chances to kill the game.
That was the Gazzaniga game, wasn't it?
Yes, it was the Gazzaniga game. Congrats to Kapala Gazzaniga getting promoted with Fulham as their second choice goalkeeper, by the way.
And Josh
if he's listening, and Josh Oliver. I'm sure you're average fans of the podcast.
He's absolutely listening.
And then last season, when it felt like a real kind of sliding doors moment for the Mourinho era. We came into it off the back of the Arsenal win, and it was like, if we can go to Liverpool and win, because I think it was the bit between Liverpool's resurgence and them falling off a cliff.
Yeah,
and it was like, if Spurs can go and win, that's a real kind of statement. And we went, did we go one down?
We went one down.
Son equalised.
Son equalised pretty.
But then Bergwijn had two chances to score. Mourinho digs him out after the game for it, and Firmino scores from a corner in the last minute. It's just like, it's happened again.
Yeah, and then it all did turn to pot, didn't it?
Because yeah,
from that position, there was absolutely no need to go and finish seventh, IMO.
No, probably not.
Probably not.
We went on a really bad run off that, so.
Yeah, and that was sort of curtains for Mourinho.
So yeah, it does feel like there's a lot of...
But in terms of this weekend, I'd say it's more set up for a Conte than a Poch or Mourinho, really.
I agree.
Just because... You can go to Anfield and you can like try to shut the door like Mourinho does, but Conte, I think, without wanting to, you know, lick his nether regions too bad, will have some plans up his sleeve, and he's shown that against this group of players as well.
Yeah.
Against more explosive teams like Manchester City, they can go and do damage. And you know how Liverpool play, like they're just
we played really well in the game at
Of course.
I'm really annoyed we didn't win that game.
Yeah,
I thought we should have won.
What? Yeah, they had a player sent off, didn't they? Robertson got sent off.
I guess the counter to that is Kane probably should have been sent off.
Kane should have been sent off.
But we played the tempo, the intensity we played at, and I put this in the article I wrote. It made me fully believe that Dele and Dombele had futures in. I thought they were very good. I thought Dele was quite wasteful, but it was like, you can see him, he's made for this third man runner role in a 3-5-2. I thought it was perfect. Dombele got the assist, but then kind of tailed off a bit, but it was like, you can still see the promise is there. But
That was a nice game, actually, really. Just because, I mean, obviously it was a very, very entertaining one, but you did sort of feel like, you get those games on the new managers where you think, okay, well, it's sort of come into place now.
Yeah.
And they gave Liverpool, you know, going for the title, or quadruple, or whatever.
Yeah.
A really, really tough game, and a game where they looked uncomfortable for like large chunks of it.
And we haven't played in a while because it was right in the middle of our COVID outbreak where like everyone in the team got it.
That was weird. Yeah, that was a good 2 weeks, wasn't it?
Yeah, I thought we were going to be really rusty, and that I think Liverpool had a couple of COVID absentees on the day, but I think they were largely unaffected by such an outbreak, whereas we had hardly trained. I think I remember this was famous for, it was the first time Højbjerg didn't start for us since he signed.
Yeah.
I was like, he's got to be really kind of feeling the effects of that for him to not start. And I think Son scored a bit, but I think he looked the same. He was one that I think really suffered from COVID.
Yeah.
So for us to have produced that performance, that made me really have belief that we do something. And it's making, I'm really annoyed because now I was kind of settling back into living with Arsenal getting the top four after the West Ham game. Now I'm kind of talking myself into, you know what, Spurs, if anyone's going to go to Liverpool and beat them, it would be us, because we have the setup to do it. I think we have the players to do it. I think there's a lot of nice little subplots which
fall into our favour a little bit.
Yeah, you do wonder if maybe we can, if this is a good time, if there's any to catch Liverpool. Just they've got their FA Cup final booked, in the Champions League final, obviously. You'd think that there'd be a little bit of rotation, even though their squad's so massive and they've got quality players all over the pitch. But maybe it would be one that we can just catch them a little cold.
Yes.
Just on those breaks, if you've got Son running at Alexander-Arnold, for example, getting into like the space he can leave. There will be opportunities for Spurs, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It will just be, hopefully it's just not long ball punted forward, because, you know, like, and it's so weird with Liverpool, because whenever they defend a break, like Van Dijk, Matip at the back, you don't see them losing a one-on-one duel, do you? Annoyingly. Because they're so good. But they are so good. They're so good.
Yeah, so good.
But yeah, it should be a fascinating game. And like, it's one I try not to hype up too much beforehand, just because we all know the inevitable. But like, in the moment, when those chances do come, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
And you know, why not?
We'll get some chances. That's the thing. We'll get some chances. It's just a matter of taking them. We do look more clinical now than we have in a long time.
Yeah, and like, I know they've got to go to Liverpool and win, but if they don't, it won't be because of that game that they've missed out on top four.
Yeah,
because of Wolves, Southampton, Brighton, Brentford. There are other games that they should have done better.
Yeah, these little patchy runs where it's just like, okay, why did you do that?
Why did you do that?
Funny.
Yeah. Oh, good.
Got anything else to add, mate?
I think I have little to add. I mean, injury quartet is still Doherty, Reggie, and Tanganga and Skip, isn't it? Not getting any Skip.
I guess Skip signed a contract in the last couple of weeks.
He did, yeah. That was nice. Good.
Yeah. Deserved that. Hopefully, when he comes back, he's not crocked like all the other DMs that got injured for mysterious reasons in the last few years and came back and were all of a sudden really shit. But you know, I'm hopeful.
Yeah, cheers for bringing that curse up, mate.
Someone's got to do it.
That's good. That's the good work that we've got to do. Okay, cool. Well, we can probably leave it there, can't we?
Nice place to leave it then. Thank you for listening. And again, sorry we haven't been able to put these out more regularly. But
I'm not sorry, Sean.
All right. Jude's not sorry. I'm sorry, at least. I'm sorry. We'll try and keep going for the rest of the season, at least, because everyone needs a bit of de-stressing from Spurs in their life, don't they?
They do.
They do.
They do.
I know I do. Anyway, thank you for listening. If you haven't subscribed, please do so and leave a review. It really means lots to us, and we'll see you next time.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.